The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to our Tuesday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, as we will spend the next almost an hour chatting about UK sports with John Hale from the Courier-Journal, Larry Vaught from VaughtsViews.com, and we'll finish up with UK volleyball coach Craig Skinner, whose team moves into NCAA tournament action this weekend over at Memorial Coliseum as one of the top 10 national seeds going for the NCAA Volleyball National Championship. So that's our lineup today. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Last night, both coaches doing radio shows. We'll start with Cal and Dante Allen back in practice and in five-on-five competition for the first time. So that was good to hear. One of the listeners asked for an update on Dante, and we were thinking that sometime soon he was going to get back into practice. So no timetable, and I would suggest it'll be a good while before you see him in action, any substantial action anyway. But now that he's out there, it gives Kentucky another body, and if all goes well, knee doesn't swell up, et cetera, and that he can get out there and, maybe by the end of the month or into conference play. It's one of those things probably that he'll determine his own ceiling as far as minutes, how quickly he picks things up, how he produces once he goes into the game, et cetera. Cal said it was a really good practice yesterday. They were very physical. He stressed that they must become an unbelievable defensive team to go as far as they hope to go in the postseason. And the guy that's always going to lead that charge is Ashton Hagans. Calipari still touting him as the top point guard in college basketball. And Ashton certainly making a case for it the way he has played in recent weeks. Got off to a little bit of a slow start, perhaps attributable to the fact that he was bothered by that leg injury. But in the last couple of games, tremendous assist-to-turnover ratio, playing well defensively, making shots. So doing all the things that we kind of thought we'd see from Ashton in year two. Calipari, we'll talk with us with a couple of our guests. He said Nick Richards is reminding him of the junior year Willie Cauley-Stein. And I can see a little bit of that. I don't think Nick's going to get as good defensively as Willie was, but I think he'll be better offensively. And just the fact of maturing into a, for Willie, it was a first-team All-America type of player. You remember his first year after Nerlens got hurt. He got force-fed more minutes and had a couple of big games, a couple of those home wins over Missouri and Florida. Second year, started to come on, and by the end of the season, was playing really well defensively, and it was a tough break that he got injured in that Louisville game, and that they didn't have him against those UConn guards in the national championship game. And so Nick, Willie was ahead of Nick in terms of how far he had advanced by the end of his sophomore year. But it was really that third year where Willie took off and became the player that earned All-America honors. And Nick is certainly is similarly having his best year to this point in year three. So we'll see if it continues. And wouldn't it be something if he had anything close to the kind of productivity that Willie had? Excuse me, got a little choked up there. AP poll, Kentucky's number 8. And credit to the voters. I didn't know if they would drop Duke as much as they should, and they did, down to number 10. Louisville was 1, Kansas 2, Maryland 3, Michigan 4, Virginia 5, and then Ohio State 6. Because that means, at the moment, Kentucky's got two teams in the top 6 on its schedule later this month. By the way, Michigan and Louisville play tonight at the Yum Center. And Duke and Michigan State play in the second half of an ACC Big Ten doubleheader. So a couple of really fantastic matchups on the tube tonight. Football, one personnel note, Trey Wilkins entering the transfer portal, freshman linebacker. Mark Stoops on the radio show last night wished him well and said they actually would be fine with some more attrition because of the demand that they have for guys that want to jump on the bandwagon. They're going to have probably possibly more guys that want to come than they have scholarships available. And so you recruit guys, and if they aren't as productive as they want to be or you wanted them to be, then they move on, and so it opens up some more slots. Stoops is out on the recruiting trail, said life is much more fun on the road right after you win the Governor's Cup like that. He said he makes it a point to visit recruits even if they tell him that they're solid with Kentucky because he wants to get to know other members of the family and just make sure that he pays back their respect in coming to Kentucky for a visit by going back to visit their home. He said that if Lynn Bowden had been at quarterback from the start of the year, he might be in New York for the Heisman. I think he's right. He said, I've never seen a group feel so much joy in working together to do whatever it takes to win the game, talking about the unselfish play of wide receivers and tight ends and running backs in particular. The offensive line's supposed to block, but those other guys have to block and sacrifice touches a lot more than they would have expected coming into the year, and they did so and really did seemingly take a great joy in helping Kentucky win games in doing that. Links to the stories that we talk about on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. John Hale coming up next from the Courier-Journal. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
John Hale joins us from the Courier Journal, courier-journal.com on the web. We'll start with Kentucky basketball. Cal last night said Dante Allen's got back in practice for the first time and doing five-on-five work. What do you think the level of expectation should be for fans from Dante for the season?
I think it should be pretty low right now until we see him play. It's interesting that he's at a position on the wing where they appear to have plenty of bodies, even with their injury situation. But at the same time, it's not like Kean Brooks and Khalil Whitney have exactly lit up the world this season. So maybe there's an opportunity for minutes. I think the one thing that you can count on Dante providing if he does play any significant minutes is three-point shooting. Anybody who watched him in high school knows that he's one of the purest outside shots around, certainly on this team, that has struggled with their consistency from the three-point line. So maybe that's an area he can help them. I would imagine that his conditioning is probably still well behind. It's going to take him some time to work up to where he could play anything close to double-digit minutes per game, and we'll see how that goes and how he is defensively with the mobility coming back off the knee surgery. But if he does play, I'm pretty confident that he could help them shooting at least.
Cal was talking about Nick Richards last night, and one of the things he said, which I thought was interesting, is that Nick's reminding him of Willie Cauley-Stein in his third year when he really took his game to the highest level of his time at Kentucky. Back in the summer, I said a couple of times that I thought Nick could be like a Josh Harrelson from the standpoint of when if you're coaching. And Cal talked a little bit this with respect to this applies to out-of-bounds plays, too, that fans complain about sometimes. The reason that they, especially early in the year, just throw the ball in to a big man with his hand up in the air is that the teams are always young, so they're working on a lot of different offensive and defensive schemes and things to master. And so things like out-of-bounds plays and situational plays and those kinds of things, you don't have enough time to do everything. So those get pushed back, and you work on those later in the season. I think for a guy like Nick, when you've got PJ and Reed in front of you and other guys before that, it's kind of like if if you tell me you're ready, then, you know, you're my guy. But if not, I've got to spend my time with these other guys. Well, now there's no other guys to spend your time with. And so it was kind of that way with Josh. And I think that probably helps Nick, right?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. I mean, if Enos Kanter hadn't been declared ineligible that year, I don't know that Josh
exactly
Harrelson
right.
ever becomes what he did, because they probably don't need to even go to him in that situation. So it's a spot where, because Kentucky missed on all those big guys in the freshman class, and then even, you know, trying to add a transfer in Kerry Blackshear late this summer, it's a spot where they don't have any other options. And we've seen Nick blossom. It's been really, you know, encouraging to see what he's done the last four or five games, you know, basically every game this year outside of Evansville. With Nick, it's always going to be a question of, can you keep it up? And, you know, he's done it so far. The next question is going to be, can he do it against better opponents? We're going to learn that this month. They've got two top 10 teams coming up later in December. All signs are positive for Nick. It doesn't mean the questions are going to stop coming, but he's done everything that you could hope for to this point to give you some hope that he's going to be this guy down the stretch, and especially into March when the games really count.
Against Michigan State, which is the only real stern test in terms of, I know they lost to Evansville, but I mean, in terms of, you know, the Final Four caliber teams that they played, it was Michigan State. He wasn't great offensively, but defensively was outstanding. And the thing that I notice about him this year, John, is he consistently really attacks rebounds instead of just, you know, hopefully catching some of the ones that fall to him, as maybe it was in the past. He's really going after them and challenging shots, too. And that's a couple of noticeable differences that I think should no reason that shouldn't carry throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really important step for him, because we've seen the potential before. I think, what, hit a rebound game, a 15-rebound game last year at one point. So he clearly has it in him to do that. It just hasn't been a case where he's done it every game, and he has so far this year. And I think the shot blocking is probably equally as important. It's been a few years since Kentucky's had that real consistent rim protector threat, and we know how good Cal's team were when they had that guy. So if Nick can do that, and, you know, EJ did it a little bit since we've seen him come back, that's a really big deal for Kentucky's defense, especially as they have so many young guys on the perimeter kind of learning their way right now.
John Hale's on the line with us on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline from the Courier-Journal, and we'll come back and continue our discussion after this time out here on the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Talking with John Hale on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline here on the Leach Report. John, how would you rank the options for Kentucky as far as bowl destinations?
I think, first off, we're going to learn a lot more after the rankings come out tonight, because that's going to have a trickle-down effect. The vibe I get is that the Gator Tax Slayer Bowl is definitely back in play after what happened this weekend, with a little bit of uncertainty, and especially if the SEC gets four teams in the New Year's Six. I think that's a pretty realistic option for Kentucky right now. If they only get three, or if crazy things happen this weekend and somehow they only got two in the New Year's Six and everybody fell down, I think you're probably looking back at the Belk Bowl would be an option. I do not think they're going to the Music City Bowl. I talked to Scott Ramsey, the president and CEO of the Music City Bowl, last night for a story that's going to come out here in the next hour or two. And he basically said that they're kind of locked into picking an ACC team for that other side of the bowl. And it sounds like Louisville is the ACC team they're most interested in. Obviously, Kentucky is not going to play Louisville again for a second game in a row in a bowl game. Basically, the whole process is set up to avoid that kind of thing happening. So if everything plays out according to plan for the Music City Bowl, I don't think it makes sense for Kentucky to be there this year. But, you know, if the rankings come out tonight and Alabama fell further than people expect, or there's some crazy things with how Florida, you know, stacks up against those Big Ten teams for the Orange Bowl, there's a lot of stuff that could happen in terms of that we still just don't know yet. But right now, I would be pretty surprised if it's not the Gator or the Belk. The Liberty Bowl really wants Kentucky. I talked to them yesterday, too. But if it's a situation where there aren't enough teams to fill that pool of six tier in the SEC, I think the Liberty's the first one that gets cut. That's how it worked in 2017 when they took Memphis, when they didn't have enough SEC teams. So I don't think they're going to have the option unless something crazy happens this week and only, you know, two SEC teams get in the New Year's Six.
So what should fans be paying attention to on the selection show tonight?
Yeah, so you know, on the surface, since there's six bowls in that, you'd think you need to be in the top 12. Actually, you probably need to be in the top 10 because one of the Cotton Bowl spots goes to the highest group of five team, which is going to be, you know, Memphis probably, which is going to be 16, 17, 18. So that's one off. One of the Orange Bowl slots is going to go to the ACC. And if, assuming Clemson's in the playoff, that means, you know, Virginia or Virginia Tech are going to be in the 20s. It's going to get one of those spots. So that knocks you down to 10. And then the other spot is basically where do Alabama and Florida rank in regards to the Big Ten team in a group of Penn State, Wisconsin, Minnesota, because the second Orange Bowl slot goes to the highest ranked available team from the SEC, the Big Ten, or Notre Dame. So the SEC is going to get one team in the Sugar Bowl. If they get two teams in the playoff, it becomes much easier to see four up there, but you would assume if Georgia loses this weekend, they're probably falling out of the playoff picture and going to the Sugar Bowl. And then it's a matter of whether Florida and Alabama, or maybe even Auburn, depending on how they're ranked, can get in that conversation for the at-large spot in the Cotton or the second spot in the Orange Bowl.
Kentucky played really well against the two ranked teams that it faced in Florida and Georgia, but came up short. I think if they go to the Gator Bowl, there's probably a pretty good chance they could face a ranked team, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting option. And for me, with the Gator Bowl, the other conversation to have it is how they view Kentucky versus Tennessee, because I think Kentucky and Tennessee are going to be competing for a lot of these pool of six bowls. And obviously Tennessee has some momentum and beat Kentucky head-to-head. But whoever from the SEC gets that spot, I think is going to play a pretty decent team. I saw one projection where I think maybe Wisconsin was the other side of the team.
And Iowa.
They could be a really, really good matchup. Iowa, yeah, they could be a spot where you get a real chance to close the season with a marquee victory for sure.
One thing I've heard is that Texas A&M, I think everybody initially kind of thought Texas A&M to the Outback Bowl because I don't think they've played in it, but one line of thinking I've heard is that there's thought Texas A&M might just prefer to stay closer to home and play in the Texas Bowl given how their season ended, and that their fans might not travel to Tampa for a season that ended the way that it did. And if that were the case, then you know, Tennessee probably goes into that Outback Bowl slot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an interesting line of speculation I've heard as well. It's going to be a real telling test case, I think, for the SEC this year. And this is the last year of their six-year contract with the bowls right now. And to date, they have not sent a team to the same pool of six bowl twice in that period. I think it's almost certainly going to happen this year because, A, they're not going to have enough teams to fill them all, but, B, it's going to happen eventually, so you might as well start now. And if they stick to that policy, A&M would probably be in the Outback Bowl. If they don't, the Texas Bowl makes the most sense for them. They were the last there, I think, in 2016. The Texas Bowl almost always takes a West team. They took Vanderbilt last year because they didn't have any other options. They took Missouri the year before that, but you know, Missouri's basically a West team geographically. You would think if the Texas Bowl is getting an SEC team, it's going to be A&M or Mississippi State. And so that kind of, you know, throws a whole lot of wrinkles into everything. If the Outback Bowl opens, then Tennessee goes there, and that's one less competitor for Kentucky.
John Hale, you can read him at courier-journal.com. On Twitter, it's John_CJ. And look for the bowl story coming out here in just a couple of hours at the CJ. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
John Hale on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. We are halfway home. Larry Vaught getting loose down in the bullpen. He'll join us next. Coach Craig Skinner also coming up in the second half of the show. As we've hit the halfway point on this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Be back in just a few.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
Second half of our show for this Tuesday, we go to the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline and bring on Larry Vaught from VaughtsViews.com. So, Larry, we'll start with the bowl talk. We were chatting about that with John Hale a moment ago. What's your feeling on where Kentucky lands on Sunday?
Well, obviously, I think we know a lot more after tonight when the rankings come out. We know if Florida and Alabama are both in the mix to where they'll go in the top six bowls, and if that happens, I still think Kentucky's got a great shot at the Gator Bowl. I think it comes down, the Gator Bowl's top choices right now would be Tennessee and Kentucky. And if both, if Florida and Alabama both get in the top six, a lot of the folks that I'm talking to tell me they think Kentucky will be in the Gator Bowl, so we will see. I would say definitely don't pay any attention to the projections that have Kentucky in the Liberty Bowl, because folks I've talked to connected with the bowls don't see any way that could happen.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you get to NCAA tournament time and you look at projections. As a fan, I always tell people, you know, kind of look at what people are projecting, and that'll give you a pretty good idea if they know what they're talking about or not. Like anybody who had Kentucky and Louisville projected to play in a bowl game, you just don't even go to that site for bowl projections anymore. Don't waste your time.
that's exactly right. So I know the Gator Bowl, there's a lot of positives to them to have in Kentucky back, and again, it was just going to kind of depend on how those top six bowls shake out, but I think if all of those shake out the way people are think it could happen for the SEC, then I think there's a better than a 50-50 chance you will see Kentucky in the Gator Bowl, so maybe we'll at least have an idea after tonight what more logical explanation would be.
Kind of feels like it's been for a few days now trending that way, and I think for fans, it's, you know, warmer weather spot. It's Florida. It's right after New Year's, right around New Year's. So all that's nice for fans. I think of it from a football standpoint. Two things that would be appealing to that game is number one, it's on a Thursday night at 7 o'clock on ESPN. I believe I'll confirm that here in just a second, but I think that's right. I think it's basically like, you know, a Monday night football game. It's the only game in town on a given night. So from a recruiting standpoint, that's nice. And the other thing is that for the team, and a sense that this people have really warmed up to this team, particularly because of, you know, just watching a player like Lynn Bowden do what he's doing, that it gives them a chance for a signature win, because they'll likely face a good chance anyway. They'll face a ranked team out of the Big Ten, since they have, you know, where the SEC's doesn't have enough slots for all of its teams for all of its bowl slots. The Big Ten has more than it can handle, and chance that Kentucky could face a ranked team in that game.
Yeah, and that would be really, really fun. And I think, as you said, the Lynn Bowden factor for Kentucky makes Kentucky even more attractive to bowl than what we maybe would have thought a month ago or something like that, because that's really kind of one of the compelling storylines in the nation right now. To have a chance to have him in your bowl game is a pretty big deal for some bowls right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Coach Stoops said yesterday if Boat had been, you know, in there for the whole time, he would be in New York for the Heisman. I think he's absolutely right.
Well, that's kind of hard to argue, but based on what he's done in seven games, it certainly would be. It's just been phenomenal. And I would also say I listened to Mark's show last night, but I tell you, it was really interesting. Some of the comments and things you got into with Calvin Taylor. Really, really enjoyed your conversation with Calvin.
Yeah, they were great. Those guys were outstanding. Just, you know, talking about, you know, kind of when they found out about Bowden. And it kind of seems like, Larry, if you got the same feel, that this kind of started as, well, it's, you know, we're short on options here. And, you know, our next quarterback is not a guy we ever expected to go to. Lynn's really talented and played quarterback in high school. Could this work? Short term, could this get us through a week or two till Sawyer's better? And he, you know, is successful against Arkansas. And I would think, even though in a loss, you go down to Georgia and you think, if you could hang in with Georgia, even completing two passes, and that, you know, it looks like this is something, let's try this one more week. And it's kind of like after Missouri, or certainly after Tennessee, they were like, okay, this is our guy. This is our best option.
Yeah, certainly, and even at Georgia, just one of the few passes they did throw, if it just been caught in the end zone like it should have, then it's 14-7, and any kind of freakish thing, and you've got a chance there. But Yeah, and just even listening to Calvin talk about how when Lynn was there, it just inspired the whole defense to want to get the ball back so they could get it back to him to see what he might do with it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting to talk about because like I say, it was obvious after a couple weeks that it wasn't just the offense that had bought in. The defense had bought into Lynn Bowden, too, because it seemed like the whole defense really upped its level of play and all. So I think for everything this team did, end up 7-5. And really, you're looking back and saying, even with all the way on, 9-3 could have been so easy to do and all like that. But still, it makes me feel a bit better, at least about our preseason conversations, Tom, when we were talking about if they didn't win 8, we were going to be disappointed that we thought the talent was a lot better than most people were giving it. So I think with a healthy Terry Wilson, you would have seen that. But again, maybe not. I mean, Lynn was so good the last half of the season, but I think early in the season you'd have seen another win or two.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember if I said this on the air or if I was telling Mark off the air that he had mentioned the Lamar Jackson comparison in terms of Lynn's competitiveness, which I definitely agree with. The other thing is I think there's a, ironically, in the year that Jared passed, I think there's a Jared Lorenzen quality to him in that Jared was a guy that you look at him and think, you know, a guy that looks like that shouldn't do what he does. But he did, and it lifted everybody else. And you look at Lynn Bowden, like, you shouldn't be able to do this in the SEC without being able to pass the ball. And yet he does. And so it lifts everybody around him.
That's a really good thought there, Tom. I hadn't even really even considered. And I think you're exactly right. It's just something about the fact that he's doing what he should be able to do and making it look so easy when he's doing it, that's exactly what Jared would do at times. And then when it didn't look easy, he's kind of improvised and would do something to make it turn out okay. And Lynn's like that, kind of like what Jared would. I think that's a really, really good comparison you got right there. It's a pat on the back for that one, buddy.
Yeah, blind squirrels and acorns, as they say. We're 18 away from the top of the hour. Larry Vaught's with us. We'll be right back here on The Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Lynn Bowden was named SEC Player of the Week yesterday for the third time since he's been playing at the quarterback position. And got a question as we're chatting with Larry Vaught here on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. Question, Larry, from a listener texting in, do you think Lynn could play running back in the NFL?
After what I've seen the last 7 weeks, I wouldn't say there's anything Lynn couldn't do.
That was kind of going to be my answer, too.
Hey, and my buddy Alan Cutler says he thinks he's not sure Lynn couldn't eventually play quarterback in the NFL if he wanted to. And, again, after watching what's gone on the last 7 weeks or 7 games, I wouldn't say there's – I mean, I just don't know what the limits might be for Lynn. He's kind of that Randall Cobb type guy, Lamar Jackson type guy. I mean, he just gets it done. It's just been a joy to watch and see what he has been able to do. I mean, there's been players that have had better seasons at different positions doing different things at Kentucky, but I just don't know that anybody has ever had a better year combined, considering all that he's had to do, than what Lynn has had this year.
And I think his timing, as far as the NFL, is fantastic because of what Lamar Jackson is doing. So I think you'll see, with the success Baltimore's having, more people willing to maybe think outside the box with a unique talent like Lamar and like Lynn could be. I said yesterday he would be, and I'm by no means a Patriots fan, but there couldn't be a better, more perfect Belichick player than Lynn Bowden, and maybe John Harbaugh at Baltimore, maybe the same thing.
Absolutely, and I was reading a story yesterday one of the Pittsburgh writers had about how they needed to draft Lynn Bowden to be able to give them some options to do different things with their offense next year if they had a player like that that could do a lot of different things. So obviously he's getting watched a lot nationally. And I think, Tom, in the bowl game, did I figure out yesterday that if he could rush for 215 yards, would you think, well, there's no way a guy can do that? Then you look at what he's done. If he rushed for 215 yards, he would exceed the single season, the Benny Snell's best single year, and then become number two all time on the single-season rushing records at Kentucky.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. If he just goes over 100 yards, which seems like a low bar with what he's done,
yeah.
That would be, I think, 7 times in 8 games. The school record is 8 times for a year by Sonny Collins. He would finish 1 yard short of doing that down at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and like I say, just the fact that you say that if he only gets 100, which we just think, well, that's just pretty much a given for Lynn.
Right.
I mean, it's just, and to think you're doing that with a defense that's stacked up there to try to load up and stop you, it's just remarkable what he has done and what this offensive line has done and what these Kentucky receivers have bought into, because it can't be easy to think you're going to be catching balls from Terry Wilson when the season starts. About midpoint of the season, you know you're going to be blocking every play. And I don't care how team-oriented you are, that's got to be hard for those guys at receiver. And, man, have they ever bought in. So that's a credit to those guys, I think.
And something else, I was listening to you on your Sunday morning show here in Lexington with Mark Berger and Anthony White, and you talked about this with regards to Leah Edmonds' dad, who's on the football staff, and how he was allowed to go over and participate in Senior Day, which is was very nice. And some coaches, I think, would be very rigid on something like that, and like, this is game day, you don't leave our team, etc. Stoops, they work hard, they put in a lot of hours, but they also are, you know, remain cognizant of families and letting people have time for family, you know, important family events, etc. And I have to think that kind of culture is part of what enables this to work like it did with the thing you're talking about with the unselfishness.
Yeah, I think so too. When you see how your head coach operates, and that kind of just filters down to you, and maybe part of that's even the John Schlarman effect with the receivers. They see what that guy's going through, and how he's doing, how his linemen buy in. But whatever it is, it's a pretty incredible thing. And I think one of the best things about Mark Stoops is the way that his players do buy into to what he says, because as much as some fans and some of us, the media, sometimes complain about they didn't do this, they don't do that, it's not exciting enough, you never hear his players say it, at least not publicly or anything like that.
No.
They understand as long as you win, it's a good day, and that's the philosophy they have, and whatever it takes to win, you go out and do it to win. And I think that was one of the things I really enjoyed about listening to Logan and Calvin both talk with you last night. That was very obvious when you listen to those guys.
And I said on the air Saturday, you'll appreciate this, given that you were over at the volleyball match on Saturday, that Leah Edmond and Nick Richards are becoming Kentucky's ultimate power couple.
Yeah. Isn't that the case? And I tell you, Leah Edmond was just named the SEC Player of the Week in volleyball for the 4th straight week, which is an amazing scenario. But even the more surprising thing to me was in the pregame ceremony for her, or pre-match ceremony Saturday. Not only was her dad there, she trotted Nick Richards right on out on the court too. And I was telling her, I said, I just wouldn't have thought about Nick doing that. And she said, well, I kind of thought he might hesitate too, but she said maybe he just was afraid to tell me no, and just said, yeah, he'd do it. So, I mean, but you are right. It's pretty incredible what they have done. And it was also interesting, Tom, talking to her just a little bit when I did. She talked about what an inspiration Nick has been for her and how he has changed her perspective on a lot of things, because she talked about, and this kind of surprised me, about that number of hours he put in the gym his first 2 years at Kentucky, and it hadn't really translated or transferred to the court in success for him. Now that sometimes made her kind of feel guilty because she wasn't working nearly as hard as Nick and was having a whole lot more success than he was, and it kind of inspired her to work even harder to kind of match what he was putting in, and how happy she was this year that now kind of all that work he'd been doing for over 2 years was maybe kind of starting to pay off for him.
Interesting. Well, we're going to let you go right now because we have Coach Skinner coming up next. You have a good day, Larry.
All right, Tom.
You can read his coverage of the Cats at vaultsviews.com. He joins us Tuesdays here on the Leach Report. And Coach Skinner coming right up. Back to the Kentucky HempWorks.com online we go to bring on Coach Craig Skinner. As UK volleyball gets set to host first and second round action in the NCAA tournament this weekend, Kentucky against Southeast Missouri. First of all, Coach, congratulations on another SEC championship.
I appreciate it, Tom. Feels good to do it again.
Let's talk about your opponent. What's the early scouting report on SEMO?
SEMO's a really good serving team, and won their league, beat Murray State, who in the semis, and Moorhead in the finals. Murray, who we played in the first round last year, it's a very competitive conference. So a little bit undersized compared to what we normally see in the league, but talented and skilled, and someone you got to prepare for, and we're already on the way doing that.
How has your team improved from the start of the season to now?
Probably the coach has figured out a good lineup that works and is efficient at what we're doing. And, probably just our IQ of the game, understanding when to go for it and when to, keep the ball in play. And probably the biggest improvement we've made is our serving, ourselves. We weren't a very good serving team, and Texas A&M served us off the court when they beat us in the middle of the league season, and we really put a concerted effort into making that better part of our game that's paid off the last few weeks.
In these recent years where you guys have had this run, three straight SEC titles, I mean, it's kind of like with Cal's team. You're putting yourself in position every year. If you can win this league, you're good enough to make a deep run in the postseason. Anything about this particular team and group of young ladies that is distinctive about their potential to make that deep run?
Probably just comparing this year to last year. Last year we didn't have a whole lot of, challenges through the league. We won 38 out of our last 39 sets going into the tournament. This year was significantly different. I mean, we got, had 2 5-set great matches with Florida. We were challenged, several times on the road to be successful, and being in those situations with pressure on and you're down and the other team has match or set point, just being able to navigate and be calm and execute in those moments is probably the biggest difference. And obviously we're going to see a lot of those throughout the tournament and, for sure this weekend in the first and second rounds.
Leah Edmonds had a tremendous career. What's a quality or two about her beyond anything volleyball specific, but just that you think is common to other great athletes that she has?
I think it's rare for someone to be able to perform under pressure when everyone in the building knows you're gonna get the ball, and she's someone that, she knows she's getting the ball. The other team knows she's getting the ball, and she's been able to score points regardless of that, assumption, and do it over and over and over again. And and even if she doesn't get it done on the last try, she has amnesia, and nothing about that pressure phases her. And so I think that's a unique quality that she has. It's very difficult to teach.
Well, I know you're looking for a real enthusiastic crowd that you've had before to come out and support your ladies this weekend. Best of luck.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much. We'll see you this weekend.
It's Coach Craig Skinner, UK Volleyball, and make sure you're there to support them on Friday, 7:30 Eastern Time in first round action in the NCAA tournament at the Coliseum. We're wrapping up the show. Let me remind you that there's one thing that Cat fans and Card fans can agree on, and that should be Shuffle Bean Coffee. It's the official coffee of both their basketball arenas, Rupp Arena and the KFC Yum Center. And the reason is that it's an outstanding coffee. They are all about quality at Shuffle Bean. You can go to shufflebean.us, read the story, find out more about it, find out where you can pick it up and get some bag of Shuffle Bean coffee for your home. Many Kroger stores all across the state carry Shuffle Bean coffee. You can order through Amazon Prime too. Shuffle Bean coffee. That's it for us.
We'll
see you tomorrow.
To the Leach Report Radio Network. Miss the show? Catch the podcast at TomLeachKY.com or on the iHeartRadio app.